You're listening to Grassroots, www.innovationstudios.com. I'm Marcus, I'm back for another Grassroots Music Q&A. Your questions have been coming in thick and fast. Some of you have been going on Twitter at Marky Guru. I've had a few from there. InnovationStudiosUK@gmail. And I've had a couple of direct messages on Instagram, Innovation Studios, and also on Facebook, where you can find Innovation Studios and ask me some questions there as well. I hope you've been enjoying the sunshine, and it's nice to be back. Not a lot to report this week, to be absolutely honest. Just been doing a few things and pottering about and all of that old stuff. Just keeping myself busy. So I think what we'll do is we'll get straight to your questions. The first one is not a question. It's from somebody who wanted me to mention something. I have a message here that came through as a direct message from Jane Dodson. And Jane was an old friend of mine from years ago when I used to work in the sports centres and stuff before I started working in music. And she says, "Hi, Marcus, I hope you're well. My son, Tim Dodson, has a sinus operation, brackets, polyps, booked for July the 21st. He is worried about the procedure and recovery and especially singing afterwards. I've heard you mention before on one of your podcasts that you had the same or a similar operation. Would you say hello and give him some quick advice, please?" Yes, of course I will, Jane. I did tell you to listen in and I'd give you advice on here. Hiya, Tim. I hope you're well, mate. I haven't seen you for years. You were very, very little when I first used to know you. And your mum is right. I have had a very similar sinus operation. Now, if anybody is squeamish, I won't go into too much detail, but if anybody is a bit squeamish, you might want to forward about 5 or 10 minutes. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it, but having spoken to Jane about it, basically Tim had a very, very similar situation to mine, and I've met two or three other people who have had this. When you were when he was a kid, he had a bang on the nose. And as he got older, his nose grew slightly wonky inside. Might have looked straight on the outside, but it grew slightly wonky on the inside. And what that then did was ended up blocking blocking one side of his sinuses. And certainly in my case, blocked one side of my sinuses and made it very, very difficult to breathe. And I permanently had a cold. And by the sounds of it, Tim's had a very similar experience. And this is nearly 20 years ago, towards the end of 2003, I went to see a specialist and I just said, "Look, I've got a permanent cold." And I'd had all the tests about, is it hay fever? Is it this? Is it that? And I'd been through the hay fever tablets and I had all sorts of different tests, and I had, without being too disgusting about it, permanent frog in the throat, permanent mucus at the back of the throat, and it was driving me nuts. And then eventually it just became so uncomfortable that I thought I'd go and see a specialist. So I went to see the doctor and he referenced, put me forward to go to ear, nose and throat, which was at Allsit. And then what happened there is they then diagnosed that I had a blockage on one side of my sinuses. And it was there were polyps and stuff like that were up there that were blocking my sinuses. And I'd never really had an operation in my life up to that point, and I was nearly 30. Just doing the maths, Jane, I think Tim's probably about, now Tim would be somewhere around, 28? Probably even 30 himself. I'm trying to think now, he probably would have been about 25 years ago. Yeah, so he's probably 30, he might even be older than that. Time flies, but similar sort of age. And what it was an operation where they had to just unblock it. And some of it was laser treatment and some of it was, you know, it wasn't pleasant on paper. But the one thing I can tell you, Tim, and I hope you're listening in, is don't worry about it. When I had it done, it wasn't pleasant. They knock you out. And then you come round again and you think, my God, you know, but I think the hardest thing about it is that I wasn't able to blow my nose for, I think it was a week after the operation, because it's very tender up there, as you can imagine. And of course, I'd been used to blowing my nose, and I'm sure you probably have the same problem because of the constant blockages. I was used to blowing my nose, you know, God, 3 times an hour, something like that, maybe more than that, 4 times an hour, every 15 minutes. On the bad days, every 10 minutes, just, and you're thinking, I'm permanently ill. And what I was told by the specialist, and I'm pretty sure that you were told the same, is that it's uncomfortable, but it's not painful. And that was, in my case, that was right. It wasn't, it's not a pleasant thing to think about having, but what happens is that they, when they take you in, they knock you out, they do the operation on you, and you can't blow your nose for a week afterwards. And that's uncomfortable because you do feel even more blocked than you did before you went in. But you've got to remember that there's a lot of scar tissue up there, and you've got to be very, very careful. So don't try and blow your nose when you come out. But what I will say, I know you're worried about singing. It says that Mum says you're worried about singing afterwards. Well, of course you are. So don't sing for a couple of weeks if you can, you know, certainly if you can avoid it, don't sing for about a month. If you've got any shows around that time, or if you're booking anything for around that time, don't sing for a month or so. I think I sang after about 3 weeks, but I shouldn't have done, really. And with hindsight, I should have taken that extra week off and maybe rescheduled your show. But, you know, I don't know whether it was just a Superman complex that I have or something. But basically, take a month off from singing, Tim. And then baby steps to get back into it. Don't go crashing straight in singing a load of rock and stuff like that. So you've probably got 4 weeks and then 2 weeks of singing. But eventually, once you can blow your nose, you will find that when you're blowing your nose, there's a lot of stuff coming out that's kind of like black stuff where they've used lasers up there. But don't worry about that. That's natural. And once you're able to clear your nose, I was able to sing within about 2 months, far better than I ever had sung before. And it's honestly one of the best things I ever had done. It wasn't something I chose to have. In the end, I had to have it. So, Tim, mate, don't worry about it. You know, it's uncomfortable, but you're in good hands with these people. And, you know, when you sing afterwards, as long as you take it easy and baby steps, and you know, it may be a good time if you're, you know, if you're looking to carry on with your music. Sometimes it's good, maybe 2 or 3 days after the op, when you can't blow your nose and you're sitting there, sort of get a pen, maybe strum a guitar and just write something, or write a few songs, or do something so you feel like you're moving forwards. But don't push anything, you know, but you've got to just unfortunately take the time afterwards to get better. But I absolutely promise you, mate, I had it. It wasn't pleasant to hear that I had to have it, but it's one of the best things I ever had done. I was told by my specialist, and it was a gentleman called Mr. Latif. He should be a dentist, really, shouldn't he? But it was Mr. Latif. And he said to me, you'll have discomfort for a few days, not pain, but discomfort, when he was right, because you can't blow your nose and it's uncomfortable. And then he said, your quality of life will be so much better. And he was right. I was able to breathe. I didn't feel like I was getting out of breath all the time, and it stopped me worrying about other things that it might be. I just felt permanently tired. You got to remember, Tim, and Jane, that, you know, if you've only got one nostril, you're not taking enough air in to keep you going. So you said to me on your message as well, when we spoke for a while, that Tim was tired out, worn out, just couldn't understand why he was so tired. And eventually they've diagnosed this. And he will be fine, Jane. All right. It was lovely to hear from you. And it meant a lot to me, actually, that you'd listened to my podcast and that you remembered that. I really do appreciate that. And Tim, mate, it'll be fine. And when it's all over and it's all done, let me know where you're playing, or come and see me, and we'll catch up, because I haven't seen you for years, but I know you remember me, and I really do appreciate that. Jane, don't worry about your little boy. He's going to be just fine. You don't need to hold his hand or anything, love. good luck, and God bless you both. You'll be fine. Need help setting up your own home studio? Why not book a consultation online? Here at Innovation Studios, we can help and advise on the best equipment for you, your ideas, your budget, and your space. Maybe even book a home visit. We can help you set up, install, and use your software, offering a recording workshop in your very own studio in your very own home, going through techniques and offering advice and guidance to get you up and running. Go to www.innovationstudios.com for further information. I really hope that all works out. I'm sure it'll be just fine. Wonderful. Okay. Kenneth says, "Hiya, Marcus. I just wondered, what's the best advice you were ever given in the music industry?" Right. Well, basically, Kenneth, the best advice I was ever given was, it's not about what you give the room, it's what you can take from the room. So, basically, every show should be different. And also, you need to react to different things that are happening at different shows. So sometimes, if you're turning up to do something, if it's a new club or a new venue and you're there early enough, have a chat to a few people and just find out, not gossip, but find out if there's anything, you know, so is there anything you don't want me to mention or anything you don't want me to talk about? But I learned, and it really works in the last 2 or 3 years. I don't claim to be a stand-up comedian, right? Promise you, I'm really not. You probably worked that out over the last couple of years. But I do like to share stories of, you know, putting a needle on the record and scribbling down the lyrics, or putting 6 or 7 45s on the arm and then dropping and putting it up, and they would drop one at a time. And I like to talk about playing my dad's records and stuff like that. But I always ask people what their first single was. And I say, well, can you remember what your first single is? Or I'll talk about, you know, my nan and the old wives' tales and things like that. And then I'll say, you know, does anybody else got any old wives' tales? And you'll learn something from that. It was just, something that somebody said to me years ago. React to the room, work the room. Don't just turn up week after week and just play the same songs all the time. Even if you do play the same songs all the time in the same order, you know, work the room. Obviously, don't go to Luton and say, "Hi, nice to be in Leicestershire," you know. But in between that, you know, if Leicester have won the Premiership or something, don't go there and not mention it. Or, you know, just get there and say, "Yeah, you've had a good year this year, Leicester," you know, or whatever. Just make a reference to the local people. But take from the room. Don't give. Song. Sometimes just talk to the room. There's a little thing I do sometimes. Some of the care homes I do, there might only be about 8 or 9 in there, maybe 10 sometimes if it's a little afternoon show. And sometimes I'll just, if I feel like I can interact with them, unfortunately sometimes that isn't always possible due to, you know, varying stages of dementia and stuff like that. But when you can, you can talk to them and say, "Well, can you remember your first single? What's your name, darling? Okay, Barbara. Okay, Barbara. Can you remember what was your first single?" And they might tell you. Sometimes I might have a birthday. I just always say, "Are there any birthdays here?" They might say, "Yeah, you know, Laura's 28. Or they might say, "Edie is 84. And I go, "Okay, Edie, we've got a birthday in here, Edie, haven't we?" And try and take something from the room so that people feel they're part of the show, rather than you just going in parrot fashion, playing the same show night after night, week after week, month after month, year after year. That was a sound bit of advice. And I always really enjoyed, and I always continue to enjoy, learning something, taking something from the room, and asking people what their first single was. And in a funny sort of way, actually, that question, "What was your first single?" You can interact with me if you want to. Send me that, you know, let me know what your emails, on your emails, what your first singles were. Maybe I'll read some out next week. So let me know what your first single was that you brought, all right? These days, you just click a button and no one really sort of goes, gets off the backside anymore and walks down to the shop to buy CDs. Although vinyl's making a comeback, so people are doing that again. But for many years, it was just a case of clicking on this and downloading this and listening to that. But your first single. The story I always tell, my first single was I went shopping with my mum when I was little, and she, if I behaved myself, she'd let me choose a single off the rack. And I chose Obladi Oblada by Marmalade. Now, it wasn't out at that time. I'm a little bit younger than that. So this would have been probably towards the end of the 70s, maybe sort of 79, 80. But there used to be a record label called Pickwick Records that used to kind of bring out singles and old songs. And they weren't the original artists. They were really sort of terrible. Well, some of them were terrible cover versions of the original song. I mean, and I always say that, you know, 40 years later, I'm playing terrible cover versions of the original song. And cheap laugh, you know, at my expense, but I can deal with it. But think about that. You know, let me know what your first single was, because that, I'm always curious with stuff like that. So there you go. But my best advice I ever got was take something from the room. Don't just give, because you can interact better. You can talk about things. And sometimes it might be something really obvious, like somebody might just say, you know, we had a burglary last week. If you play the show and don't mention that, or even make light of it and something like that. Say, I heard about what happened last week. I'm worried about leaving my guitars up here now, you know, or making a joke about something like that. Because otherwise, people just feel that they're just getting a robot every single week. Be human. Talk to the room. People skills, what I talked about in a previous podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think, maybe last week. Be human. Talk to people. People skills. Chat to them. Ask them about their week. Go around the tables when you get there, when you're setting up. A lot of the venues I play, people have spoken to me before, so they come up, hello, Marcus, how are you? And I'll always say hello, you know, I'll always have a chat to people. Even when I don't feel like it, and sometimes I don't feel like it, sorry if that's bursting your bubble, but I'll always make that effort. Take something from the room. Remember a couple of names as well when you go back. You know, hello, Sue, all right? You remembered me. Of course I remembered you. You know, little things like that. It's all very, very small details, but it means the world to people. So anyway, on that, interact with me and let me know what your first singles were, and I'll read some of them out next week. Thank you for your question. Ever wanted to play guitar? 10-minute tutorials now on YouTube. Beginner's Guitar. Marcus takes you through the early stages, tuning, basic chords and strum patterns to start you on your journey. Further information, go to www.innovationstudios.com. Looking forward to getting your interaction on that. I always look forward to that. You never know what you're going to get when you ask someone what the first single was. I play a place in Southend, and it's the Salvation Army. I do that now and again, just a little acoustic show for them a couple of times a year. And it's a real, you know, the Salvation Army place with a big cross on the wall, and you say your first prayer and thoughts for the day and little things like that. And, you know, it's great, you know, I don't mind that sort of stuff. That's all great. And I was in there, asked people what their first single was, and asked about three or four, and people were putting their hands up. I was like, you're not in class, but, you know. And a couple of ladies said, oh, it was Guy Mitchell singing the blues. And another lady said it was Here in My Heart by, I think it was Matt Munro or something like that. I don't know. But another lady puts her hand up. And bearing in mind we're at the Salvation Army, and what was your first single? She went, Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare. I was like, so there you go. you never know what you're going to get. And I looked at the cross and looked at her and I said, should you be in here? But that was her first single, you know. You don't have to, not that I'm mixing music with religion or anything like that, of course. Although you have to remember that I heard Nico McBrain is a devout Christian from Iron Maiden. You know, most of Iron Maiden have always been, people have always thought that they were sung songs about the devil and stuff like that. Well, I personally don't think they did. I think it was interpreted that way, but people are like, born again, how can you be a born again Christian if you're an Iron Maiden? But it doesn't matter. It's personal life and professional life are two completely separate things. And I think I read somewhere that Nico said forgiveness is one of the main things. So I feel forgiven for playing songs that people would interpret as being anti-Christian. Put it that way. It's what I read somewhere that he said that. Don't totally quote me on it, but there you go. I don't know how I got onto that anyway, but first singles. I'm looking forward to getting some of those. There's a couple of questions, some of the obvious ones that we often get. Tony says, are you coming back to Liverpool? I'm assuming it means Oasis. There's nothing in the pipeline at the moment, Tony. The reason for that just being that they changed the evenings that we were doing. We used to do Saturdays in Liverpool, and they moved us to a Friday, which was made it a little bit difficult to get up there, travel up there on a work day. You know, a couple of lads still worked, and also it made it difficult with the traffic and stuff like that on a school night. So we did a couple there, and then they moved the tributes to a Thursday night, and no one's going to go out on a Thursday night, I don't think, Tony. I know you will, mate, and I appreciate that, but until they change that back at the Cavern to a Saturday night, I can't see Oasis or many other tributes coming back. They and good luck to them. They started doing Beatles stuff on weekends, on Saturdays, big Beatles shows and big Beatles conventions and stuff like that. Well, they would do. It's a Cavern, you know what I mean? So no problem at all with that. But yeah, that we won't be coming back. Unless there's another couple of venues in Liverpool, but I think there was a Barfly in Liverpool, and there's two or three others, but you know, the Cavern's the main one that we wanted to do, and there's no plans as yet, but I'm sure we will be back, Tony. So you get little things like that. Also, Alan said, will the Wall to Wall albums ever be released on digital media? Probably not, Alan. Just because it was a time and a place. And if you ever want them, you can still buy the CDs online, or you should be able to get it from somewhere. There's no plans as yet to put it on there. I think Stevie wrote the songs. My brother Steve wrote the songs, and he just looks at it as something that's parked and in the past, doesn't necessarily need to see the light of day again. And for me, it's a shame, but you know, it's not. There's no, you know, no real problems with that. I don't have a problem with that. If people liked the music at the time, they probably bought the CDs at the time, and whether or not now it's going to be relevant, I don't know. Helen says, why don't you tell your story? I don't think anybody would care, Helen. I kind of tell my story every week and swap my stories, but I've had a few people who have asked me if I'd do. They said, would you do an interview about your career? And I don't know. I probably will, just because I think there's a lot of stories and a lot of advice or little just things that people might be able to pick up. I wouldn't do it from an egotistical point of view. Hey, look at what I did. But I would be talking about some of the old venues I played, and it might ignite something in somebody where they might just look at it and go, you know, wow, you know, I played there. Or so possibly. But we'll see if I ever get round to it. And hopefully it might happen soon if I do it. I did have two or three people as well just say you should do an interview for yourself, and I was like, I don't want to, you know, not too worried about that. But where should your sound man set up? Basically wherever he can, or wherever they can or she can. Ideally you want to be towards the back of the venue, in the middle where most people are at big concerts, but in pubs that isn't easy. So sometimes your sound man might set up at the side of the stage and walk to the middle and just make a few adjustments from there. In these days of things being a lot of desks these days are programmed via using tablets and stuff like that, and or maybe even your phones that linked via Bluetooth or linked directly to the mixer, you can put your sound stuff at the side and then stand at the back of the pub and mix the band from the back of the pub by using the digital link, which is clever stuff. But the only thing I'll say about that is if you've got a sound man, you're doing well. Why is that to do our own sound most of the time? Who was this anyway? Let me find out. Let me make a few clicks here. Let's find out. Where should your sound man set up? Paul from Doncaster. Paul from Doncaster. You're doing really well, Paul. You got your own sound man, mate. But yeah, I mean, in these days, at the age, anywhere, you can pretty much set up your sound man anywhere if they've got a way of adjusting the levels from where they're standing. But in a perfect scenario, you would have enough space around them, maybe, you know, towards the back of the venue in the middle. So what would ideally be the best place to watch the band from? Right in the middle towards the back. Jenny, how do you work out percentages for agents? Well, that's just pretty much they work that out themselves. But most agents take 15% or 20%. If you've got an agent that's taking 30 or 40%, well, either get another agent or make sure you're getting paid, you know, £10,000 a gig. But yeah, agents vary, but most of them are 15, 20%. And basically, 15% is very, very simple. If you're on £200, then what you do is you take 10% of that, which is £20, and then you take you halve that and add it on. So it becomes 30 quid. If you're on £300, then you take £30, which is 10%, and then £15. So it becomes 45. So it's 255 to you, 45 to the agent. 20% is just a fifth. Just divide it by five. So that's how you work out percentages for agents. And some people, you know, I know it sounds strange, but some people can't see that. I've known people who are quite good at maths who have said to me things like, what's 20% of 100? You know, and you go, really? And then they suddenly go, oh, of course it is. But, you know, sometimes you don't see it. But that's usually how you work out percentages. But most agents, some of them pay you by backs, so they work out the percentages and everything at their end. But if you want to check all the figures, and I've never had to do that with an agent, they've always been pretty solid, then that's how it's done. You take 10%, well, you take a nought off, so 200 becomes 20, and then half of 20 becomes 10, you add that on, so it becomes 30 quid. That's what 15% is. Should somebody run a band or should it be a consortium? Depends. Sometimes, I can't see who wrote this, let me have a little look. It comes from Al B in Leicester. Should somebody run the band or should it begin to sort them? It's nice if you've got a manager or somebody who's assuming the role of manager, maybe a parent or something. But usually you can run it as a consortium. Every single member of the band deals with different things. Maybe one organises the recording and the rehearsal room, one deals with venues, one deals with marketing. So it varies. As long as everybody is okay with that, that's, you know, I should be okay with that. Marnie says, do you remember any old rehearsal rooms like Temple Farm? Oh, God, yeah, I remember Temple Farm. Yeah, I won't say where it was, but Temple Farm was run by Laurie. I happen to know that Laurie passed away a couple of years ago. I heard about that, and I was sad to hear that. But there were three little rehearsal rooms and one big one, and it was basically on sort of around the back of a pub, and it was on like a car breakers, almost like car breakers yard, and towards the back of it was this building that was the rehearsal rooms, and we used to have some great fun there. But yes, I do remember it. Mushroom and things like that are still there. I don't know if Sound Advice is still there. They were in Deptford. And I'm not sure there used to be one in Southend, and I can't think what that was now. But yeah, Temple Farm. Funny you mention that. Yes, I do remember that. And I remember it fondly as well, and rightly so. Thank you for your little questions. Innovation Studios hoodies, many colours and sizes available. Our logo proudly emblazoned on the front. The back can be personalised with your name or your nickname or anything you want, as long as it isn't too shocking. Click to order online www.innovationstudios.com. This one comes from Eddie Healy. Doesn't say where Eddie's from. Hi, Marcus. My bandmates are constantly on at me about tuning my guitar silently. How can I do it? Eddie, loads of ways. But most of the time, if you have a pedal tuner, then you can take... you run through that, and sometimes that cuts the signal to the amp. So your guitar's still going in, but your signal from the amp is cut, so your guitar isn't making a noise. Where people can sometimes go wrong is they might have like a little tuner, just a portable tuner, and they might take a line out on their amp and just sit it on top. And sometimes you can tune with that. The problem is with that you've got to, the people in the pub have got to listen to you going dong, 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 dong. Who wants to hear that? The other way is get a clip-on tuner that sits on the headstock and turn the volume down on your guitar. I've done that a couple of times. So you can tune in like that. But really, it's just a case of, either a floor tuner, pedal tuner, if you like, or a stomp tuner, I suppose you call it, which cuts the power, or a clip-on tuner. If you start running a lead from your amp, then anything that's played through your amp will go through, will take a line out to the tuner. But then you've got to have the amp on in order for that to make a noise. So that, in my opinion, get yourself a clip-on tuner that sits on a headstock and then turn the volume down on your guitar, and you can just tune in using that. And then just swell the volume back up again, and everything should be back where it is, Eddie. Good luck with it, mate. I hope you get that sorted, and I hope your bandmates don't give you a hard time about it. Question from Joey Tandy, who says, why do musicians get so upset about MP3? Well, the reason they get upset about it, Joey, is because they spend a lot of time making an album and sort of paying attention to detail. And what MP3 basically does is just compresses a lot of that sound to make it a much smaller file. And musicians have spent weeks in the studio, months in the studio, and in some cases, like bands like Def Leppard, years in the studio in order to perfect that sound, only to have it condensed and to not have it sound maybe as pure. You got to remember that 99% of people out there that are non-musicians wouldn't notice. But if you are a musician and you spent all of that time putting a tambourine on something, and then when you listen to MP3, it's hardly there, and it was quite prominent in the WAV mix or in the vinyl mix, then, you would feel that your work had been compressed. I suppose the only thing I can say about it is if you were a painter and you had painted The Last Supper, which is a huge, great painting, and then just by cutting little bits, maybe making the space between the disciples a tiny bit shorter, maybe making the view through the window a tiny bit darker, you were able to compress that huge painting into half of its size, most people would go, that's amazing. But the original painter would come along and go, what's going on with that? It's not quite as simple as that, but that's kind of it. I believe, although I can't be 100% sure, but I believe that if you have little things like you have maybe two guitars playing the same thing, sometimes on the MP3, it compresses that, and there's only really one and a bit guitars there instead of two prominent ones. Sometimes if there's little things like cowbells and things like that. Now, the other thing, though, to remember, the counter argument to that, Joey, is that musicians, by having their music on MP3, reach a wider audience. So most of them, when you read about it, are like, okay, our music's getting heard. But this is why a lot of the bands are back on tour again, or coming out of retirement, or re-releasing new material or something like that, or re-releasing their albums on vinyl. Because you've got to buy vinyl. You can't compress a vinyl to... But you can't compress a vinyl to MP3. I was going to say you can, but not really. Whereas CDs, you just rip that to your library in about a minute and a half, and then give your mate a copy on a flash drive. That's what people... But then cassettes, cassettes were not quite the same sound as vinyls. And as an artist, I mean, I want as many people as possible to hear my music and like it. But if I've spent all of that time making that album exactly as I want it, I don't really want somebody putting it into a machine and compressing it right down to something that doesn't sound, that sounds like the album, but in some cases being played under a blanket, you know. And a lot of artists have stopped using Spotify, I know, or things like that. But I don't know. I mean, there's arguments for both. But a lot of musicians have problems with MP3, just because it takes away the quality of all of their hard work. And you know, I think it's a mixed bag of opinions. So maybe most of the musicians you've spoken to are upset about it. For me, I'm upset about it if I wanted it to be a reflection of my work. If somebody said to me, can you give me a reflection of your recording ability or your albums, or I'd want to play them the proper WAV or CD or FLAC or whatever, you know, as best I could. But if it's a case of we want to hear one of your songs and I can send it on a WhatsApp file as a compressed file in, you know, 10 seconds rather than email it and it take a 45 minutes because it's a huge file, then, yeah, there's arguments for both. But most musicians, it's really just compressing the hard work that they've put in and not really letting them have the full control over the proper sound. That's about the best way that I can describe that. But thank you very much for your question, Joey. I really, really do appreciate it. And I hope that the people around you don't have a problem with MP3. Because I can tell you, if you like this podcast is downloadable in MP3. But it's a bit different. You don't need to hear my voice any clearer than it is at the moment. And to be fair, some people don't even want to hear it at all. So at least you're one person who's tuning in, Joey. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Susan says, I'm an author and I'm recording my audiobooks. But before I set everything up, are there any sounds that cannot be soundproofed against? That's a good question. Yeah, it doesn't matter how soundproof you are. If someone is drilling the wall the other side, that's going to come through. Helicopters are a real nuisance. Planes, not so much, actually, in my experience. But helicopters, my goodness, they come through. Obviously, any noise inside the studio, but I'm assuming you mean, you know, outside. And also if next door are having their foundations done and, you know, or there's somebody's digging up the road outside that vibrates through the floor, yeah, that can be a pain. But if it's an audio book, you've just got to be vigilant. Obviously, if someone is drilling or whatever, you won't be able to record it that day. And you can soundproof certain rooms and find certain ways of doing it, find a quiet corner. But if someone's drilling the other side of the wall, yeah, you're not going to get away with that, Sue. Or if a helicopter's flying low over the roof, you're not going to get away with that. Also, little things like doorbells have a funny sort of way of creeping through the setup. And obviously your mobile phone. If you've got your mobile phone in the studio, do not have it switched on. Otherwise, it's going to make a noise, isn't it? So obviously anything that's likely to ring or anything like that, inside the studio, of course you can't soundproof against that. You've just got to make sure it's turned off. But outside sounds, helicopters are a pain. Certainly houses next door having foundations done or sometimes digging up the road outside can break through. Somebody drilling the other side of the wall or hammering the other side of the wall, if you're, let's say you're recording in your living room and you're in a semi-detached and the other side there, they're putting new plasterboard up on the walls or something, you're going to struggle with that scraping and that noise. But if you try and soundproof, doesn't matter how soundproofed you are, foundations that are kind of shaking the joint, you'll never soundproof against that. And helicopters can be a real nuisance. Certainly drilled walls are a pain. But just got to do the best you can, Sue. Listen, that's it for this week. Pleasure as always to take your questions. Some of them were nice and short and sharp. I like that. And I'll look forward to being back here next week. You take very, very good care and look after each other, won't you? You take care now. Yours in music. About to sign off, but I forgot. www.innovationstudios.com, innovationstudiosuk@gmail.com. You can find me at Marky Guru on Twitter, and you can also find Innovation Studios on Facebook and Instagram. Hope to hear from you soon. Don't forget, get in touch with me next week. Let me know what your first singles were. All right, that's it from me. Yours in Music, signing off. See you next week. Bye-bye for now.